This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Athletic Baseball Show. To celebrate this year's Baseball Writers Hall of Fame announcement, Ken Rosenthal put together an incredible guest list for a three-hour preview and reaction show. The show aired on YouTube, but we've placed it here in audio form in three parts. Part one features interviews with legendary baseball writer Claire Smith, longtime Phillies shortstop Jimmy Rollins, who is on the ballot for the first time in 2022, former Red Sox second baseman Dustin Pedroia, who has thoughts on David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez, and Curt Schilling, and Braden Halliday, the son of Hall of Famer Roy Halliday. Part 2 includes Ken Griffey Jr., Jim Palmer, Jim Cott, and Eduardo Perez. And Part 3 reacts to David Ortiz's election to the Hall with interviews with Fangraph's Jay Jaffe, The Athletic's Jason Stark, Dan Connolly, and Britt Garoli. Check out all three episodes right here. Without further ado, here's Ken.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Athletic's Hall of Fame special. I'm Ken Rosenthal. Thrilled to be joining you today. Hoping you're going to enjoy the next few hours of our show. It is going to be different. It is going to be something, well, really special. We are coming on today in anticipation of perhaps the most debated Hall of Fame hit ballot in the history of balloting. Why do I say that? Well, you guys know the reason why. We've been talking about this for weeks, months, even years. This is the last year for Barry Bonds, for Roger Clemens, for Curt Schilling, and for Sammy Sosa. It is the first year for David Ortiz and for Alex Rodriguez. These are all players who, for one reason or another, are deemed to be rather controversial. And obviously, it's going to be really interesting to see not just who gets in today, because, of course, we all expect it's just going to be Ortiz, if that, but also how the vote totals fare for some other players, for Scott Rowland, for Todd Helton, for Andrew Jones, all of these guys kind of on the rise. Now, I'm going to show you my ballot, and we're going to talk a little bit about how this is all going to go down. But keep in mind that even if no one is elected today, six Hall of Famers already have been elected by two separate veterans committees. I'm talking about Buck O'Neill, the great champion of black ball players, an eight-decade career on and off the field, two-time All-Star first baseman in the Negro Leagues, then was the first black coach in the National League or American League, the first black coach ever. He is one of the Hall of Famers who will be inducted in July. Gil Hodges, of course, great first baseman for Brooklyn Dodgers, the manager of the Miracle Mets. Two living members from the Minnesota Twins, Tony Oliva and Jim Cott. Bud Fowler, who was born in 1858, often regarded as the first black professional player. And then finally, Minnie Minoso, who was a two-time All-Star in the Negro Leagues, then the first black player for the White Sox, a seven-time All-Star. So we're going to have some Hall of Famers. The question is, which players, if any, will get in from the BBWAA ballot? Now, I'm going to show you my ballot right here. I voted for the full 10 this year. You can see it right there. Bonds, Clemens, Helton, Jones, Jeff Kent, Ortiz, Rowland, Schilling, Sheffield, Wagner. Now, I've written about a number of times, written about why I go with Bonds and Clemens, and why it was Schilling. And for me, Bonds and Clemens, because we know there are other players who are alleged to have used PEDs in the Hall, and I find it very hard to distinguish between who did what and to what extent. So I put them on my ballot. And Schilling is a different kind of situation, of course. He's had a series of offensive comments on social media over the years, and he is someone that obviously has asked not to be on the ballot, but he's on mine because of what he did on the field. I don't have A-Rod on it. I don't have Manny Ramirez on it. And that's because they had situations with PEDs. They were caught when baseball had a policy with penalties in place. Now, before we go to our first guest, I want to make one thing clear. We're going to talk about all this today, but we're also going to talk about why this is a great day for baseball, why it's a celebration for baseball. And the reason for that is because this is the most thrilling moment of a player's career. When that player gets that call, there's nothing like it. It's unusual. It's just unprecedented in that person's life. It changes his life. So from that perspective, we're going to have some fun with this as well. And I want to make one last point on that. everyone has a different opinion on who a Hall of Famer is. And of course, the PED question has complicated it some over the years. But my view is that I respect all opinions. This is a very subjective process. And each person might have his or her own feelings about what makes a Hall of Famer, about where PED should be weighed. And in our society right now, I know it's kind of fashionable when the other person has a differing opinion of yours to say, that person's dumb, he's wrong, etc. No, I want to hear it all. And you should want to hear it all. There are a lot of points of view, a lot of valid points of view. And while I don't necessarily expect you to agree, I do expect people to at least listen. All right, with that, we are going to go to a very special first guest coming to you live from Temple University. This woman is the 2017 winner of the BBWAA Career Excellence Award, Claire Smith. She is a friend of mine and someone I have admired for so many years. She is now the co-director of the Claire Smith Center for Sports Media and an associate professor of journalism in the Klein College for Media and Communications at Temple. Now, we are joining her live as she teaches a class. They're back in class in Temple, in person. Good for you guys. And she is teaching today a class for upperclassmen and women called The Influence of Sports Media on Modern Society. Kind of an apropos topic, I would say. So Claire, welcome. And I want to ask you to lead this off. If you're talking about sports and modern society, what issues does this particular Hall of Fame ballot raise?
Okay, that's a great question. First and foremost, though, I want to thank my co-teacher, Karen Turner, who would be in the Hall of Fame of Journalism, 30th year. I'm a rookie, I'm a babe. You have me on top of lineup that really, I'm in Ricky Henderson's spot, really? Okay, so your question is again, are there any issues? Is that what you're asking?
Well, what issues does this ballot raise? What are we talking about here from your perspective?
We're talking about character. And character wears many faces in terms of this ballot. Cheating, betraying your brotherhood, if you will, by cheating and getting that illegal foot up. The words you choose, character is considered on every ballot. That comes straight from the Hall of Fame. And Curt Schilling has lost some traction because of his beliefs. The one that got me after 3 yes votes for Curt was when Curt liked a tweet that said that there was no massacre in Newtown, Connecticut, of those little babies that died at the elementary school and as well as their teachers. I drive by Newtown. I used to drive by Newtown when I worked at ESPN, and it's hard not to cry and not to look at that sign and just wonder about the broken hearts that are right off that exit. So that got me, and for the last 2 years, I have not voted for Kirk. There are also some pretty intense investigations going on into the life of Omar Vizquel, who I think otherwise would be a Hall of Famer before his 10 years were up. Domestic violence issues, accusations, and investigations. So I think he's lost a lot of traction as well. I've always voted for Barry and Roger. I always thought that Bonds and Clemens were Hall of Famers before, if they used steroids, before they lost their minds. I didn't vote for a lot of other suspected users until the Hall started accepting the presence of managers and other executives who benefited from the steroid era. These managers are great. They can need 3 hands to hold their World Series trophies. But their rosters were filled with players who were suspected and or caught using steroids, i.e. A-Rod and Manny. With A-Rod and Manny, they didn't get my vote because fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I'm an idiot. You get caught twice. There, I think in this case, there's a two-strike rule in baseball, and you don't get to go in that hall with people that did it absolutely cleanly. You don't get to surpass Willie Mays and be rewarded for it. You don't get to approach Hank Aaron, pass Frank Robinson, and be rewarded for it if you cheated and got caught, promise never to do it again, and then get caught again.
So Claire, let's go over your ballot and tell us who you did vote for and why you voted for them. We're posting it right now on the screen. We have Bonds, Clemens, Ortiz, Andy Pettit, Scott Rowland, Jimmy Rollins, Gary Sheffield, and Sammy Sosa. I guess I would ask you about two of those in particular. Okay. Pettit and Sosa. Go ahead.
Pettit admitted that he used steroids, but to me, he was never caught, never suspended, but he did admit to one moment of weakness where he used once. Okay. That's, to me, you admit it, you are basically saying, I'm sorry, I really messed up, and please forgive me. And I know that there, for all intents and purposes, there are steroid users in the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Famers have told us such off the record. They will tell you, look this way, look that way, but they're here. Andy Pettit admitted it and showed contrition. And the other was David Ortiz, I believe you asked about.
Sosa.
Okay, Dave. Oh, Sosa. Sammy is different than Barry and Rogers in that I never, ever, ever heard a teammate or enemy or frenemy say, take me aside and say he's cheating. Okay, it's all been innuendo, and yet he gets less love than any of the big names on the ballot. I'm surprised he made it this far and had that percentage. Did Sammy build his career on steroids? Perhaps he did, but there's not a teammate that's thrown him under the bus, not a coach or a manager ever whispered. Maybe he was smarter than everybody else, but we still live in a country where you're innocent until proven guilty. Roger was never caught. Barry was never caught. Lots of innuendo out there. Sammy was never caught. Less innuendo. So I started voting for Sammy routinely after the coaches and the managers and the commissioner who oversaw, for the most part, the steroid era were all put into the Hall of Fame.
Claire, last question before we let you go, and it goes to a column that Jeff Passan wrote today for ESPN, and he argued that Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame because the Hall of Fame is a place for history. And a friend of mine pointed out to me years ago that while that is certainly true, there is representation of Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, of all these guys in the Hall of Fame, and that election to the hall, to the gallery, that is not a right, that is a privilege. How do you see that?
I agree with you absolutely. People say Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame in the portions of the hall that deal with history, jerseys, his cleats, his bats, whatever. But it is a club within a club. These people who have their plaques up there and saw the steroid era come bulldozing through records that took 20, 30, or 25 years to build, they're hurt by this. They're hurt by the fact that people cheated their way. Frank Robinson once told me that he was number four on the home run list for a quarter of a century, 25 years. And he said he will be lucky to finish in the top 100 because of all the fellows that were boosted by PEDs. and heard in his voice, he was almost in tears. And no one can tell him he's wrong. No one can say you'll be remembered for what you were because you were passed by the 600 club and so on and so forth. And that's just unfair to the people who did it the right way.
All right, Claire, before we let you go, I'm going to allow you to introduce our next guest. He is on your ballot. He is someone you voted for. He is a Philadelphian legend, and you know him very well. Talk about Mr. Jimmy Rollins.
Jimmy Rollins played down about 90 minutes south of the great Derek Jeter. It's hard to get out of that shadow in terms of great being among the greatest shortstops ever. And yet Jimmy carved out a wonderful piece of territory here in Philadelphia, helped carry the Phillies to their championship during his career, came within one Mariano Rivera ninth inning save of perhaps having another win, and was just the face of a franchise in a city that isn't often kind to its players of color. And Jimmy helped the city grow and understand that it's in a new era. It's not the city that chased Jackie Robinson out, but it's this, our just beleaguered Dick Allen, but it embraced Jimmy first and then Ryan. And he helped change the whole outlook of a city, a team, and its fans. And I think that, again, character plays a lot into my voting. And Jimmy, you're a character.
Well, Claire, thank you so much. So well put, as always. Claire, we'll talk soon. Jimmy, welcome. Good to have you, man. And obviously, this is your first time on the ballot. I know you're waiting for the 6:15 announcement like everyone else on the ballot. And I must say, before we even get started, people should understand it's an achievement just to be on the Hall of Fame ballot. There's a screening committee, players are selected, and it honors your career simply to get there. But Jimmy, first I wonder, what has the day been like for you? Are you anxious? Are you excited? Are you just kind of rolling along here?
Good seeing you, Ken. Thanks for having me. Really, I actually flew into Philadelphia this morning, so I took the red eye. I always take the red eye when I fly back east. So fortunately, I've been tired enough where I've been napping pretty much all day, just actually having my alarm set, waiting for this phone call. I want to make sure I didn't miss it. But, you know, it is an honor to be on the list. And it's, I think as a player, you go out there trying to be something better or more than what you are. You look up to the greats, look up to the legends to see how much more you have to do. And that was something that I did my entire career. I always looked forward. I never looked at what was standing right in front of me. It was always who was better than me. Who am I chasing? What ghost am I chasing? And can I live up to it?
Now, Jimmy, today when this is announced, have you thought about what a good result for you might be, what you would want it to be?
I haven't, other than hopefully being eligible to be, you know, to remain on the list for, you know, years to come. And I don't think you asked for anything more than that. Obviously, you know, some people know immediately, you know, you talk about it while they're playing. This is the first ballot Hall of Famer. I was always, you know, a guy that was in question because I did some things that are, you know, very significant, things that where I stand alone. But, you know, just because it's unique, does that mean, you know, it's Hall of Fame worthy? But, you know, Larry Boyle once told me, you know, just because you're not in the Hall of Fame, if you don't get in the Hall of Fame, it doesn't mean you didn't have a hell of a career. And I think that was something that helped me out along the way. Not that I ever focused on that because it was always about winning. But like I said, I always looked at the greats. How much more do I have to give to be compared to this guy, to be considered a great, just like the ones that came before me?
So it sounds like, Jimmy, you did think about the Hall of Fame when you were a player.
Of course. Of course. It's I think you have to. And it's not. And let's make sure we characterize this correctly. It's not when you're playing. It's not in the game. It's after the season when you go back and you look at what you've done as a player. Okay, that's good. I may have been the best shortstop that year. I may have been the best shortstop for a couple months, but there was always somebody better than me. Like, okay, look at this guy. Look at that guy. Coming from the Bay Area, Ricky Henderson, Frank Robinson, Joe Morgan, Willie Stargell went to Encinal High School, just as Pops did. That's who I'm chasing. I'm chasing those ghosts, the guys that came before me, not just, you know, my contemporaries, just the guys that came from the same area, and they have a legacy. And that legacy is to go out there and be a star. We never go out there to try to achieve anything normal. We're trying to be the best. You know, I talk the trash and I'm going to walk it. And that was something coming up in the barrier. That's what you have to do. So when I say I'm chasing those guys and those ghosts, that's the ghost I'm talking about, the legends that came before me.
All right, we are talking to Jimmy Rollins, the all-time leader in hits in the Phillies' 131-year history, the only shortstop with 200 homers and 400 stolen bases. Jimmy, I don't know if you read the article by Jason Stark recently, but he went through your numbers, mm-hmm. did some compelling things, but he also talked about that certain intangible quality you had, and he called it that thing. That thing, as I understood it, was that winning element, that winning aura that you brought. And I wonder, from your perspective as a player now, as an announcer on TBS and with the Phillies, what should that thing mean in a Hall of Fame vote? Should it matter a lot more than it does?
I believe yes. You know, with all the numbers, you can isolate, you know, certain parts of the game, and you'd want to compare a guy against another guy or against a group of people. But something that doesn't show up is the ability to bring the best out of your teammates, the ability to walk into a clubhouse and command it, the ability to walk up and down a dugout and get everyone's attention when needed. Also, the ability to put a city and an organization on your shoulders and like, this is the way we're going. How do you quantify that? And is it a real thing? To some people, it's not. But to the guys that put on a uniform, you know it's a real thing. That I took comfort when the game was on a line and I was on first or second and Chase or Ryan, whoever after me, was up. Look, you get it in a gap, I'm scoring easily. You hit it right at somebody, I know I have to do everything, you know, correctly. And I think they knew that also. That takes the pressure off you of having to feel like you have to do it all and be the man. You just chip in. And that was something that we preached on our run, is that if they don't want you to do it, believe in the guy behind you. And that was something that we believed in. And I think for me, I'd always believed in it, but it wasn't until I said it openly in 2007 about where the team to beat, that it made it okay for us to go ahead and speak publicly on it. Don't be shy, don't run from it. And I think that boldness is what led to those five straight division titles and one World Series. Unfortunately, just one, but at least we got one.
And Jimmy, those were some great teams. And you had some great players on those teams. Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Cole Hamels, yourself, of course. If you had to look at that group, exclude yourself for a second, mm-hmm. which of those guys in your mind should be a Hall of Famer?
I would say Chase, just because of what he did. I mean, his baseball IQ, having a knack for getting a big hit. And if he didn't get a hit, he was getting hit by a pitch. He found a way to get on base. And that's playing winning baseball, doing whatever he can, whatever you can to help win a ball game. And he won a lot of ball games for us.
Now, defense is something you took great pride in, yep. something you excelled in. And defense can be difficult to measure by the analytics. We know this. And yet also, there is a quality to a player's defense that kind of goes unseen. And Charlie Manuel talked about it in Jason's article. He said you were always in the right place, always in position for cutoffs, always threw the ball to the right base, all of these things. How does a player, or how does a player get appreciated for that kind of thing in today's day and age when we are so locked into the numbers?
That is a great question. And honestly, I don't know. I grew up watching Ozzie Smith, Cal Ripken, and a Bay Area watching Mike Bordick. And when I went to the games, that's what I focused on. Hitting was easy. You can see hitting. You either got a hit, you hit a home run, you struck out, whatever. You can see that result. Defense, you have to pay attention to. And my father would always ask me, okay, what happened during the game? And, you know, I would tell him, you know, the highlights of Mark McGwire hit a home run, Jose Canseco did this, Ricky Henderson did that. He didn't care. He's like, I can see that. What happened? What did you see? And I started paying attention to pre-pitch setup, guys shifting, shortening up on a double play ball because the runner at the plate was fast, or bagging up a little bit because you knew you had a little more time. So I started looking at the game that way, the things that won't show up on a scorecard until an out's recorded, until a play is made. And it's like, wow, you were already there. Well, I looked at the pitch, I looked at the hitter, looked at the tendencies, And I put it in my computer in my head and was like, this is where I'm going to take the gamble. Everything's a gamble, even with the analytics. You know, you have a guy pulling the ball 80% of the time. The 20% of the time he goes the other way and he gets the big hits. How do you defend that? By watching the game. And I don't think you're going to necessarily get that in the numbers. So I always paid attention to what a hitter was trying to do, what a pitcher had that day. And I would just adjust accordingly. And not just myself, us as a team. Chase and I, we stay with each other. We had the shift. I'd always let the third baseman know, hey, I'm over a step or two. Take the line. Anything up the middle, you know, Shane's going to be short. Or look, I'm over towards the middle. Come with me. Or stay there. We'll take the space and at our home ballpark. A hard hit ball to left field, let that go through because we have a better chance of that runner stopping than one of us deflecting it. So all those little things that, for me, tried to help set my team up in the best position to record an out or in certain instances, like you have to give up something, but they're not going to score as a result of that, make them get two hits. Those are things I took a lot of pride in.
Jimmy, last thing before we let you go, where are you on Bonds and Clemens and even Schilling? I know Schilling's a different category, obviously, yep. Different question. But let's start with Bonds and Clemens. Should they be in?
I think so. You know, we talk about it all the time here. It's, you know, spoken about, you know, is it a hall of good people or a hall of great athletes? And, you know, you could take the stretch of time in their career where you can look at it and say, okay, there was no doubt this person, you know, didn't do anything at this period of time. And they were dominant guys, Barry at the plate, Barry on the bases, Barry defensively. There was nothing in a game that he couldn't do. And then you look at Roger. I mean, he was just the rocket, literally. He'd strike you out. He'd intimidate you. You know, he's throwing pitches under your chin, flipping you. And that's what he did, and you respected it. And you knew every time you faced him that day, and I remember as a kid watching, it was like, okay, he has a possibility of throwing a no-hitter every time out. How do you not respect that? And then Curt Schilling, you know, his body of work, putting together the career that he did, you know, and I might be slightly biased because he took care of me in my first All-Star game and has always treated me well. And what he did in Boston, you know, we're talking about the bloody sock. He was a big game pitcher, brought a World Series to Arizona. There wasn't a moment that was ever too big for him. Give him the ball. If you say, look, you know, guys during my era that you want on the mound when the game's on the line, that's the dude I want on the mound. He's not going to back down. He's not going to be intimidated by the moment. And you know, on the other side, you better bring your lunch today.
Jimmy, thank you very much. Good luck today, man.
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it.
We'll be talking soon. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, from Jimmy Rollins, we go to another fantastic middle infielder. This guy played for the Boston Red Sox. He was a teammate of the leading candidate, perhaps, on today's ballot. That would be David Ortiz. We welcome in Dustin Pedroia. Dustin, how's it going, man?
Good. What's up, Ken? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, how's retirement treating you?
Awesome. Awesome. Coaching my kids sports and driving them from basketball practice to baseball to everything. So it's good.
All right, let's start right there. Coaching the kids, I want to know right now, what kind of coach are you? Are you one of these guys yelling all the time, or are you kind of mellow?
No, I mean, I just try to teach them the game. They're young. I mean, my 9-year-old and 7-year-old, you know, just teach them the game, you know, teach them how hard it is. You know, you're not going to get a hit every time, which, you know, a lot of the times they do. But just yeah. Teach them the right fundamentals and how to act and how to deal with the game of failure, because that's what baseball is.
All right. So, Dustin, you were a teammate of David Ortiz's from 2006 to 16.
Yep.
Obviously, a lot went on in those years. But I'm wondering, was there a point where you thought, okay, I think he's a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, you know, he just did. The crazy thing about David was, I mean, he was always the foundation of our team. You know, he's hitting in the middle of the order. You can book what he's going to do every year, you know, with the amount of home runs, the RBIs, you know, the leadership that he brings. And not only, you know, when you're playing with somebody like that, you don't necessarily think, oh my gosh, he's a Hall of Famer. You think you just watch him and try to get better. And that's what my mindset was, you know, watch this guy. He's won before, you know, how can I better myself to help the team win, to win a World Series? And that's what David's focus was. You know, when you have a quality of player like him and he's a team first mentality, you know, that's when you're special. So yeah, I mean, I knew he would, you know, he's a Hall of Fame player, but most importantly, his goal was to win. And, you know, that's why we hit it off so well, you know, from the start.
Dustin, what stood out to you most about him when he was in the box?
You know, I've said this one other time, but his ability to slow the game down in big situations is like nobody else. You know, I obviously you watch tons of film on every hitter and everything. And Barry Bonds, in my opinion, was the greatest hitter ever. But in a pressure situation, I want David Ortiz up. He's came through every single time. When you need a home run, David Ortiz hits it. You know, I saw him do it in 2013 and everything. And Barry didn't do that in his first part of his career in the playoffs. But from playoff game one till the end, in a big moment, the game was in slow motion for David Ortiz. And that's the one thing that I'll always remember is the bigger the situation, you know, he doesn't get amped up. He controls the strike zone. He knows what he wants to do. And he attacks and executes. And for somebody to do that at that level, I mean, he's the best at it.
And Dustin, let's talk about what kind of teammate he was. And I know this doesn't always factor into a Hall of Fame voter's mindset, but I recall you when you came up, I think it was August 2006, mm-hmm. You started off, you were like 4 for 40. And I wonder at that time, was Ortiz supportive? Was he riding you? Was he ignoring you? What was he like?
He was fine. You know, he just, you know, at the first part of 06, I got called up. I got thrown into a tough spot. We just got swept by the Yankees 5 games. They threw me into the lineup in Anaheim, and it was more of, hey, play defense. You know what I mean? We need you to play defense. Alex Gonzalez just got hurt. Mark Loretta was hurt. So it wasn't, they didn't count on me to be hit at the top of the lineup and, you know, be a run producer. And then obviously the next year, my rookie year in 2007, I started out hitting ninth, and it was the same thing, play defense, you know, don't, you know, turn the lineup over, get on base. And then once I got from bats underneath me, you know, it was a different thing. And then it started to click where I hit at the top of the lineup. I was sitting in front of David and I was just, honestly, I was trying to get on base for David and Manny. It makes my job easy. I don't have to try to do too much. I just got to get on base and do my job because I know these guys behind me are going to drive me in.
It's funny, Dustin, my picture of David in the clubhouse when I wasn't in there, when you guys were alone, is of a guy walking around, dropping F-bombs, life of the party.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate portrayal?
Sometimes, you know, he's, you know, he has a soft side too. You know, he's like a chameleon, you know, whatever situation he's in, you know, if he's around me, he'll get louder because I'm louder. You know, if he's around, you know, Xander Bogaerts, who's more of a quiet type, you know, he'll be quieter. Or, you know, if he's around Alex Cora or Mike Lowell, you know, he's just the way he navigates himself to other players is, you know, it's one of a kind. And you know, it was special getting a chance to play with him for as long as I did. And I learned so much from him.
Now, you mentioned Manny. And Manny Ramirez, obviously, you were a longtime teammate of his as well. He has not gotten the support that David has. And Dustin, we know the reason. It's the PED situation, the failed tests. As a former player and as a former teammate, how do you see him? Do you see him as a Hall of Famer or do you see him as a guy, hey, he was great, but?
Yeah, probably. I mean, the second part. I mean, he was obviously right-handed hitter. I mean, he's one of a kind, you know. you know, but you know, obviously you're there's rules, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's where I'm kind of at, you know, because I look at my own situation, you know, I played at 5'8", 165 pounds, you know, and having a great career and one slide deters my career. And instead of, you know, trying to take something that could maybe help me out health wise so I could play a longer career, I didn't chose not to do that. Like you know what I mean? Like I value the game and try to play the game the right way and set the example for my kids. But everybody's different. Everybody has their own way about them. Everybody, you know, has their own choices to make. And I'm not one to judge him or anything like that. You know, you can do, I just can speak for me. But playing with Manny, you know, it felt good when he's hitting. I'll tell you that. You know, you get a little nervous when they hit a fly ball to left, but other than that, that's my thoughts on it.
Schilling, another former teammate of yours, another guy on the ballot today, controversial for an entirely different set of reasons. Dustin, in your mind, even with all the offensive things he has said, even with him saying he did not want to be part of this process, should he be elected today?
Obviously I might be biased. I play with Schill, you know, and Schill was great to me my rookie year. I saw him pitch in the World Series and he had, when I mean nothing, he was throwing meatballs in there. And I think he threw 8 innings of 2-hit ball and beat the Rockies. And I'm like, if this guy can pitch like this in this situation, and then you look at the body of work before that, it's special, man. Like the big game, any big game, you know, he's a guy that he has the ball, you know, you have a great chance of winning. And yeah, I get it. You know, he's outspoken. He says what's on his mind. And I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm not one to judge him. He's, you know, everybody should be them. You know, but I don't think as a teammate of his, you know, I don't think it should affect if he's a Hall of Famer or not because of what he says. You know what I mean? I mean, you've seen me and Terry Francona talk to each other before. If anybody hears that, you know, we should be arrested for some of that stuff. But, you know, everybody's different. So, you know, but as a pitcher, I want him on the mound and I want to play behind him. I'll tell you that. So I don't know if that means you're a Hall of Famer or not.
You know, Dustin's funny about Schilling. I covered him at the start of his career in Baltimore in 1988 before he was traded for, of course, the Glenn Davis trade and then came to Boston, all these things. So back then, and even later in his career as it progressed, he was someone who was very conscious of baseball history, very mindful of it, someone who I would have thought then would be extremely proud to be in the Hall of Fame. This guy knew his stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that how you saw him?
Yeah. Exactly. He's very intelligent. You know, he loves baseball. He might tell you sometimes he doesn't, which, you know, it's like, leave me out of this process. But like deep down, like the way I view him is he's a baseball lifer. Like if he calls me or we text probably once a month, like I'll send him some autograph stuff for his charity stuff and things like that. But you can tell his mind's always running about baseball. Like he has opinions about everything. And you know, I was fortunate enough that I had guys like him around as a rookie that I got to learn from, because it helped me in so many ways as I, you know, navigated through my career, in that environment. And, he's a baseball nerd.
All right. Let's wrap it up with a couple more questions about Ortiz. You were a very fine defensive player. And obviously there are players who can do that. And there are players who are just DHs.
Yeah.
And we saw Edgar Martinez going to the Hall of Fame a few years ago, primarily as a DH. David was even more of a DH. For you, should that matter in this process? Should DHs be held maybe to a higher standard?
Well, the funny thing about David is if you look, I know he didn't play first base a lot, but he's actually pretty good at first base. Like when we played in the World Series, he could play first. So that's why, as me personally, I'm like, everybody just thinks he can just DH and whatever, but he can actually play first. I understand your question, but what David did offensively and what he did for the opposing teams to literally game plan for one guy. Hey, there's which guy are we not going to let beat us? David Ortiz. And he still beat you. That's a Hall of Fame player. And that's the way I look at it. You know, if If David's out of the lineup, I get pitched differently. If David's in the lineup, I get pitched differently. So those are the guys that when you're going to play against, you know who they are. And if they still can beat you, that's my opinion of a Hall of Fame baseball player.
Now, last question. Now, I've got stories about David just from working with him at Fox for a few years. You played with him for 11 years.
Yeah.
Can you give us one story that stands out to you that kind of, in your mind, maybe defines him? And if it's a little maybe off color, you can go there.
I mean, I think the best one is I've already said it at his roast. They made me do a roast about him. And this, shoot, I had played with him for probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 years already. And we're on deck and in between innings and a catcher goes to block a ball and it squirts over by me. And the umpire wasn't there to give him a ball right away. So the catcher looked at me and goes, "Hey, what's up, Dustin?" And I was like, "Hey, what's up?" And David walked over. I think he was having a bad day. And he goes, "You know, what the F did he call you?" And I was like, "He called me Dustin." He goes, "Why'd he call you that?" I'm like, "That's my name, man." Like, he goes, "Oh yeah, is that right? I thought it was Pee-wee." So we're going back and forth. So he thought my name was Pee-wee for the first 7 years. And the funny part about it is I've been hitting in front of him for the last 7 years. And they actually announced my full name right in front of him. So either he's locked in or he can't hear or something's going on. But that's probably the funniest. But but honestly, like with David, like we played together for so long and in games that meant so much. Like it's sometimes I felt like we could sit together and we're thinking the same thing and you know, our minds were similar on to how to attack and beat another team. And that was fun. It was special to play with him. It was even more fun playing in the World Series with him because I got to play first and second. So, you know, that was a good time, but you know, he's special to me. And obviously I hope today's the day for him.
Dustin, thank you so much. Always good talking to you. We miss you, man.
And thank you. I miss you guys too.
Hope everything's good in retirement. Thanks
so much. All right. Have a good one.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to our Hall of Fame special. Ken Rosenthal here. And by the way, I am wearing a bow tie today. Usually I only reserve them for Fox games, but a special occasion. It's Hall of Fame announcement day, and I'm wearing the Stand Up to Cancer bow tie. Obviously, so many of us have someone who has been touched by cancer and is in our thoughts and minds and prayers and all of that. So that bow tie today, this one I'm wearing, that's for all the people out there who have been affected by cancer in some way. Now, our next guest is someone that I met in Cooperstown, of all places, in 2019 when his father was elected to the Hall of Fame with 85.4% of the vote, one of the great pitchers of our generation. And his son, Braden Halliday, the son of Roy Halliday, is joining us now. He is someone that is right now in Tallahassee Community College. Braden's 21 years old. He's got a younger brother, Ryan. So, Braden, I know you started off at Penn State. Let's talk about you first. Then we'll get to your dad and all that. How are you doing? How are you doing now that you're at Tallahassee?
Yeah, I just want to start off by saying, you know, thanks for having me on, and I really appreciate it. But yeah, so I started off at Penn State. I was there my first two undergrad years, and, you know, I had a great experience there. I love that place with my whole heart. It's just what I wanted to do with all the COVID and the rosters and everything. It all got screwed up, and so the opportunity just didn't line up for me. So now I'm in Tallahassee and I absolutely love it here. You know, a lot of my friends from back in high school went here, and it's a great, junior college conference. So it really gives me a great opportunity to kind of, you know, step back from the craziness, everything, and, you know, hang out with my friends, but also be able to still compete in a great conference against great players. And then after this, have the opportunity to go back to a 4-year. So I've absolutely loved every experience I've had so far in college. It's just, you know, a shame that everything happened with COVID and kind of messed everything up a little bit, but it was just an adjustment we had to make. And I think everything's going real well right now. Just trying to get to a, get to a place where, you know, I'm working to build some more muscle, you know, maybe tweak a few pitches here and there and get ready for the spring right now.
Now, when I met you, and this was, of course, at your dad's induction, he passed away in 2017. This was in 2019. And you mentioned that you had an interest in sports media and maybe an interest in communications. And I'm wondering, obviously, your goal would be to be a major league pitcher. I get that. But what are you thinking maybe about a career off the field?
So, this year I'm supposed to get my AA from TCC. And then, like I said, I'm hoping to go back to a 4-year. So I'm hoping to get my communications major there with a minor in sports media. So off the field, honestly, my ideal job is I'd love to work in a front office for a team. For all the people out there who play the show, I love the franchise mode. You know, I just love seeing how the organization works and, you know, managing my players, drafting, all that kinds of stuff. So being a scout's another thing I'd love to do. But I just love the game so much, and I just have such a passion for it that it's really hard to see myself in the future doing something that doesn't have to do with baseball. So to be able to, you know, cover baseball on a daily basis and, you know, be able to provide insight on maybe the ins and outs of things that, you know, some people don't get to see, I would absolutely love that so much. And then also a job like you have where you get to cover, because like I said, you know, I want to be a GM. So being able to cover things like the trade deadline, like that would be a dream come true for me, especially being the first person to learn about everything. I think that'd be really cool.
And Braden, you experienced the joy of this day in kind of a bittersweet way, obviously. Your dad was gone when he was announced as going into the Hall of Fame. And if you can take me back, what was that day like for you and your family, the day that Roy Halliday became a Hall of Famer?
Oh, my gosh. The Hall of Fame was such a surreal experience. It was, I think the coolest part for me was, you know, some people always talk about in my church, they're like, oh, you know, when I go to heaven, like, I want to hang out with this person. I want to hang out with that person. And I feel like I got to meet so many people like that, that I always wanted to meet. Greg Maddux is a guy that I wanted to meet for so long. And I got to talk to him, Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, just some guys that like I grew up idolizing. So that part of it was absolutely surreal. But on my dad's side of it, you know, all the people there were just so great with welcoming me and my family into Cooperstown and all the festivities there. And the ceremony itself was just a surreal experience, you know, because being able to look back on everything my dad did and, you know, think about how much he loved this game and how much he would have appreciated that moment. It just meant so much to me to see everybody, you know, cement his legacy into the Hall of Fame. And so that's an experience that I think will easily go down at least top three for my entire life already. So I would, and I hope that I get to take part in it, you know, a lot more and go to the other inductions once, you know, I have the time to be able to do it.
Braden, it's funny. Your dad, we've talked about this. He didn't like much attention. He was someone who stuck to his routines. He was not out there entertaining the media. He was always polite, never a problem that way, but he was locked in. He was always locked in. So I wonder, do you think he would have enjoyed the ceremony, or do you think it would have been kind of a little uncomfortable for him?
I think in the same way that, you know, you said it was a little bit of a bittersweet moment for me and my family. I think it'd be the same way for him because, you know, just knowing how much he loved what he did and how he always wanted to strive to get to that next level, you know, do that next thing. I feel like that's one thing that he always really wanted to do. And so for him, it would have been just unreal to be able to see himself get that achievement, especially, you know, first ballot, all that stuff. Shy. So I feel like it probably give me, you know, a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of the jitters, but, you know, definitely something that he would have loved to do and that I wish he would have gotten the opportunity to do for sure.
And Braden, you were 13 for his final season. That's how old you were. So most of his career took place when you were a child. What do you remember?
Well, so like I said, I love the game so much. Like I just have such a passion for it. And so growing up, you know, being able to talk to him about things and, you know, just be able to experience his career was so surreal for me. And I actually remember a lot because I was getting taken every opportunity I could that if, you know, he had to go to the field or something, I'd be waking up at 4:30 to go with him. Spring training and things like that, you know, every opportunity I had to go with him to the field, I'd go. So I have so many memories of, you know, meeting different guys in the clubhouse, you know, hitting lessons from people like Jim Thome, just so many different cool things I got to experience that, like, especially growing up, like I was still a fan of the game, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not on the field, so I'm still a fan. So growing up a fan of baseball, to be able to experience all those things, like, you know, all-star games, playoff games at the end, it was just so surreal. And it was so cool for me because it gave me such a passion and love for the game. And that is what still carries me today to want to do what I do. But no, growing up, I wouldn't trade it for anything. Being able to have all those experiences and get that insight into, you know, what major league life is like was probably the coolest thing in my life, for sure.
Now, Braden, you mentioned that one day, if you don't work in a front office, you might want to cover the trade deadline, be a sports reporter. Now, I want to show you something here that's going to demonstrate to you the downside of it. I've never talked about this with you. You might be aware of it, but I sort of doubt it. So in the spring of 2012, it was not going all that well. And I talked to two scouts who said, hey, Roy Halladay, he always comes out gangbusters, but he doesn't look the same. And I reported that. And your dad, rare for him, kind of ripped me the next day and said that was poor reporting at the extreme end of poor reporting. Probably the best rip of me that I've ever heard, actually. Turns out he did go on the DL in May, and then he had shoulder surgery the next year, and that was it. But at the same time, Braden, I'm sure you're at the end of it once in a while from your dad. He could be tough.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. and like we talked about, you know, he wasn't much of a media guy. So especially when, you know, if things aren't going right, that's something that, you know, you don't want to get into the media. So I'm sure it's not a personal thing or anything like that. You know, just looking out for himself. But no, that's funny, though. I actually never heard of that story or that quote. So that's really funny to me. But no, I remember he told me one story about a media guy in the postseason. He was telling me the camera guy was like too close to his face while he was trying to do all his warm up pitches. Circa like 2011, and so he took this camera and he just shattered it in the clubhouse, made sure this guy came nowhere near him for the rest of the game. So he definitely wasn't a, I don't think I'd consider him a friend of the media while he was playing.
Nah, he was fine. And you know what? A lot of players react when things are written about them, and it's all good because, hey, they're entitled to their say too. Now, one other thing I will tell you about his career that was one of the great highlights of my career was covering the no-hitter in the playoffs. And I did that game for MLB Network, Cincinnati Reds, of course, at Citizens Bank Park. Tremendous performance, one of the all-time great postseason performances. And after the game, Braden, I was interviewing him for MLB Network, and he was really excited. He was really happy because him and Ruiz had combined on this masterpiece in the postseason, a huge game. And as I started to interview him, we were surrounded by photographers. I had never seen anything like this before, and we both kind of like went back like that. But I remember that game so vividly. I wonder, what do you remember about that night?
So the perfect game, the first one, I was supposed to go to, and I didn't get to go to. And then the second one, the no-hitter, I made sure 1,000% that I was at that game. I told my mom, I can't be at school. Like, I got to leave. I got to go see the game. So I remember just, I think I was behind home plate. I don't remember like how many rows up or whatever. But, you know, like I said, growing up a baseball fan, like at this point, I'd never been to a playoff baseball game because my dad hadn't made it before then, and he was like, there's no way I'm taking you to a playoff game if I'm not pitching in it. So I had never gone to experience the playoffs before. So just to be able to, you know, see a playoff atmosphere in real life was the coolest thing for me. Sorry, someone just tried to call me, screwed up my computer.
Go ahead.
Ever. And then, you know, after the perfect game, I kind of was going through that game, and I was realizing towards like the sixth, seventh inning, I was like, Mom, like, he could do it again. Like, he might do this again. And I remember the one thing I really remember was I think the one walk was Jay Bruce, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was like a 3-2 count. I want to say it was like a cutter right off the edge. I remember being so mad about that call. I was so upset. But no, I think my brother's birthday is the day after the day of the no-hitter. And so to be able to go home after that and also celebrate that was super cool. But just knowing that it was his first playoff game and he wanted to go out there and, you know, show everyone I'm just as good under the big moment as I am in the regular season to have a performance like that, like I was just so proud of him. You know, because I knew that was so important to him, and I knew how long he had waited to get to that point to be able to be at that level. So to introduce yourself to the playoffs in that way is just unbelievable.
Well, Braden, it's great talking to you, and it was great meeting you in Cooperstown. Great talking to you and connecting with you again. Wish you all the best. We'll stay in touch, man.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, Braden, it was a pleasure. Great talking and great seeing you.